You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
6:06 right now. Good morning and happy Friday. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Civic Media Network. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning, I'm Brian Noonan. Glad you are here. We'd like to hear from you throughout the morning. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. I'm just putting out a blanket warning to the world. If anybody steals this weekend with some sort of horrible global event, I will be very, very angry on Monday.
One weekend, that's all we're asking for, Brian.
Just a weekend. We'll keep monitoring what's happening now. What's happening now is not going to end. Okay, that's fine. But as I look forward to 9:03 when we are done and the weekend begins, which I know if you're just getting up and leaving for work and you're not going to be done till 5 or 6, you're like, you lazy sack of, no,
yes.
Trust me. It's been a week for all of us. But yeah, I will tease this. If you can stick with us for the news and the politics and all the great guests and conversation that we have, we're going to end with some fun. It's Friday, so Dairyland Diaries will be here. And Jamie, you will appreciate this. You know, this is International Women's Month.
It is.
All the Dairyland Diaries, female centric.
Ooh, I love it. Very nicely done.
Getting it done in Dairyland Diaries. That's at the end of the show. We're going to talk about pie. But before that, we have to unfortunately turn our attention to Iran and get some updates, some headlines as we do every morning. Tehran came under intense bombardment overnight after Israel said it launched another wave of strikes targeting the Iranian capital. The strikes have damaged more than 3,000 homes across Iran, and the Iranian Red Crescent Society said that. CNN is unable to verify those figures, but we know there has been a lot of damage. No matter what the actual number is, there's been a lot of damage.
I mean, all you have to do is watch the video circulating from the area on social media to see the destruction that's actually happening throughout the Middle East. Also in headlines this morning, Israeli assault on Beirut as fresh strikes have hit the Lebanese capital hours after Israel said it carried out a broad-scale wave of strikes overnight that was targeted at Hezbollah sites in the city. And Israeli military is warning to evacuate almost all of southern Beirut, causing lots of panic last evening as people fled parts of the Lebanese capital.
And the three-man council running the country is preparing to introduce a new supreme leader. That while the U.S. president, you know who he is, says he wants a say in the matter. Analysts say, it's not that simple.
I have thoughts on that as to why the president of the United States, after basically attacking Iran, and I get, again, good reason to do so. I understand that Iran has been a problem for multiple years. I don't believe there was an imminent threat to the United States, but we know Iran has been a problem for many years. I don't understand why the president of the United States would think he gets to weigh in on that decision now.
Because it's puzzling. He actually thinks he rules the world, and his is the most important opinion. That leads us to the next headline that the president has said. I want you to listen to this to see if this is a man who cares about us as American citizens. Trump said soaring gas prices in the U.S. do not bother him. Even as the war disrupts global energy supplies, the U.S. has given India a 30-day waiver to purchase Russian oil because stuff has been stranded at sea. Yes, of course the gas prices don't bother him. He doesn't drive.
Right.
We pay for his gas. Mm-hmm. So we're paying for our gas. We pay for his gas. And he doesn't ride around in a Hyundai. He's got what do they call it? The Beast?
The Beast, yeah.
The Beast. And I'm sure that's getting very low MPGs.
Well, here's the other thing that I would say about this. The president doesn't actually get in vehicles all that often. He gets in jets quite frequently. He gets in planes quite frequently, but we're also paying for the jet fuel or the gas to power his planes to go from Washington to Florida and Florida to Washington. So
this is truly a Marie Antoinette analogy. He does really not have any idea what happens to regular American citizens and the pain that this causes all of us for really no apparent reason.
The thing that bothers me, I think, the most, and let's be honest, we see this with a lot of politicians, not just the president. However, he seems to be the best case scenario, is when they can't actually put themselves in real people's shoes and have no idea what real people pay for anything because they can't actually, you know, bring themselves down to the real type person, the little people type of level.
That's because for him, real people have always been servants or service workers or employees that had to answer to him and kiss his behind. So he doesn't. To him, real people are below him.
Yeah. Which is the unfortunate part, considering he serves those real people who he sees as below him. In other headlines, our Iranian ballistic missile attacks have sharply reduced the U.S. Central Command, according to the U.S. Central Command. Iran said that it has launched a hybrid drone and missile attack against Israel overnight. Also, war in Iran has caused a significant increase in demand for Russian energy products, Brian. That's according to the Kremlin. That came a day after the U.S. gave India a 30-day waiver to purchase Russian oil that's currently stranded at sea as this conflict in the Middle East disrupts the energy markets. But that's okay. The president doesn't care about how much you're paying for gas. It's not important right now.
And finally, our last headline from Iran. U.S. Israeli strikes have killed more than 1,200 people in Iran and more than 120 in Lebanon. That according to each country's state media. So that's where we stand. I would say good news that we haven't suffered any more American casualties, but that does not lessen the tragedy of the six American service members that have been killed so far. And we're going to talk about how the president and the secretary of defense addressed those losses later in the show. But we buried the lead because some big news coming out yesterday. I begged us to play Ding Dong the Witch is Dead this morning, but no one would do it.
I won't do it.
I know you won't do it. I don't blame you. That's why I asked for a consensus amongst the group. But the president, the president fired Kristi Noem, but did he really? But either way, Kristi Noem is no longer Secretary of Homeland Security. She is out. She found out during lunch, and then she had to go make a speech. Ha, he doesn't care about anybody. But this is the thing, Jamie, and I'd like to get your opinion on this. And we'll give you that's really the fact of the story.
Yeah.
He fired her. Mm-hmm. She's not head of Homeland Security. He is putting forward Mark Wayne Mullen. And we'll get more into Mark Wayne Mullen at the beginning of the next hour because
he's fun.
I'm going to use this analogy again. And if you're eating your breakfast, push it aside for a second. Replacing Kristi Noem with Mark Wayne Mullen is like pooping your pants and running home to change your shirt. It's not, you're really not taking care of the problem.
No, you're not.
But Kristi is out, but she has been given another job.
She's got a new role.
If you fired me, you're not going to give me another job. He never fires people completely because that would show that he made a mistake.
Right.
So this is optics. This is, all right, Kristi, you got caught. Showing your lack of leadership. You got caught because you spent $220 million on a company that had only been incorporated 8 days before to do a series of commercials where you are the star. You were horrible in front of the Senate, and you made me look bad.
Yeah.
So you got to go. But I know that you love me. I know you love me, and you want only the right people to be able to vote. So I'm going to put you in a Marvel movie.
Yes.
I'm going to put you in the Shield of America. I'm like, wait a minute. What? Is Captain America part of this?
It's very strange.
The whole thing is bizarre.
It's a security initiative in the Western Hemisphere. And who isn't thinking this morning that Kristi Noem may be now in charge of Venezuela with this new role? I mean, that's kind of what it feels like is happening. Because part of her responsibilities will be keeping track of what's happening in the southern hemisphere of the world as well. So who knows where she's actually going to end up or what's actually going to happen. But really, this comes down to what the White House saw as optics, because several officials were frustrated with not only the answers that she gave in front of the Senate and the House this week in those committee hearings, but they were also frustrated with some of the management issues at DHS, including the decision to pause TSA pre-check and then unpause it and then pause it again and then unpause it and eventually just whatever happened. Hopefully you were getting through the airports during this funding lapse, okay? Republican senators had recently begun questioning the leadership during those hearings. They had concerns about how she's handled contracts for the ad campaign, and some officials at DHS said that the removal had been expected for the last few weeks. There was internal tensions and complaints about how the department under Kristi Noem was being managed. And now here's the very interesting part about this story too, Brian. Corey Lewandowski, remember that name? Way back when? That's got to like sometimes go to the Wayback Machine,
her
right?
Friend with benefits allegedly in the plane.
Yes. Well, he is her top advisor and longtime ally. That's what we're calling the friends with benefits now. He is also expected to leave DHS. And so you're going to have the two of them out. Maybe they can go run this new force, the Shield of Americas, together.
Shield of Americas.
I mean, she does like to dress up a lot to do her job. So maybe we'll have a new uniform for this as well that she can pull out of her closet.
She's going to come out dressed like Muammar Gaddafi or something, with the big epaulets and the sunglasses. But, you know, it's for everybody who's celebrating this. It's good, but we're going to get into the devil you know versus the devil you don't.
Right.
And if you're not familiar with Mark Wayne Mullen, which that's a mouthful. That's a lot of name.
It's hard to just let it roll off the tongue quickly. Yeah. Yes.
But if you're not familiar with him, you will be. We will acquaint you more with Mark Wayne Mullen coming up. And I don't feel better about what's happening at all.
And let's be realistic. DHS isn't just about border security. This is the agency that also oversees airport screening, cybersecurity, disaster relief through FEMA, and a whole lot more. So when you have this type of leadership at the very top, it's going to affect real operations that can impact all of us on a daily basis, even if we don't understand how it's impacting us. And that's what I think is scary, because when we get into the conversation about Mark Wayne, you're going to see quickly that he doesn't have any real experience either, like many in this administration,
None.
To lead this department. So that's, it's, yeah.
Mark from Prairie du Sac texts in basically the same thing. Another unqualified person in charge of Homeland Security. He does have the one qualification, though, Jamie, that you really need to advance in this administration. He backs Trump no matter what.
Yes.
He is just like Kristi Noem and everybody else. He is a pit bull.
He is.
He just, No, nothing you want in a more diplomatic and managerial role than a guy who fights in a cage.
He's definitely not as eloquent of a speaker either, and we'll hear some clips from him later this morning. It's 6:19 right now. You are listening to Daybreak. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. And when we come back, three towns call in Wisconsin call for more talk about data science. We'll get to it on the Civic Media.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Across the state of Wisconsin, Daybreak with Brian and Jamie is back.
6:22 right now. Thank you so much for joining us. A little bit of a weather headed our way. In fact, in the Madison area, we're going to see some heavy rain through a good portion of the morning and other parts of the state as well. So much warmer temperatures over the next few days. Of course, we'll keep you updated on all of that. You are listening to Daybreak. This is the Civic Media Network. I'm Jamie Martinson.
And good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. Yeah, the springtime storms rolling in this weekend. It's It's a little nerve-wracking, but it's also a sign that, okay, it's not going to be a snowfall.
Yeah, don't get too comfortable, though, folks.
Today, it's not going to be snowfall. Just qualifying that. One text really quick before we move on. We were talking about the Shield of America and Mark from Prairie du Sac texting, more like Hail Hydra. Yeah. And if you didn't think of that the minute you heard Shield of the Americas, I don't even want to know you. Yeah. I don't want to know how you didn't make the Avengers connection when you heard S.H.I.E.L.D. But anyway, data centers are the bane of some people's existence. We talk about them all the time. We talk about sweetheart deals secret deals they may or may not have made with certain towns. Well, now, three Manitowoc County towns, two creeks, two rivers, and only one Mishicot. Mm-hmm. Only one Mishicot? There's not two Mishicots?
There is not two Mishicots.
All right, well, good. One is plenty. Mishicot's doing it all by themselves. Anyway, two creeks, two rivers, and Mishicot are pushing for one-year moratoriums on new data center developments. Just saying, hey, let's pump the brakes. The town boards passed these resolutions asking the county to pause permits and construction for any new data projects not already approved. So,
yeah.
And at some point, it's good to see, right? You got to wait. Let's see the ones that are approved and the developed. So let's see how that actually affects us before you keep giving permits.
Right. And with what is being asked by these cities, they would have the option to extend that moratorium an additional 6 months if they finally find that there needs to be more research. But this is really coming after a Texas-based company called Cloverleaf Infrastructure approached property owners in the area with offers to buy land for a possible project. Cloverleaf, if you don't remember seeing them in the news, they previously helped launch a very controversial data center campus proposal in Port Washington. And they had approached landowners in Greenleaf in Brown County, even though that project was abandoned after there was a ton of community pushback in the Port Washington area. Now, a company spokesperson for Cloverleaf says that they're going to continue to evaluate potential data center sites in Northeast Wisconsin. There's no specific locations right now chosen, though, in Manitowoc County. Wisconsin is currently seeing a surge in this development. Obviously, we've seen major projects in Mount Pleasant by Microsoft and also Meta in Beaver Dam. A lot of local leaders are saying that the Manitowoc County area may be attractive because it's close to the Point Beach nuclear power plant, and that can provide large amounts of electricity that the data centers require. Now, when it comes to this moratorium, town officials say residents are obviously concerned about losing farmland, Brian. They're also concerned about changing the rural character of the communities. And we're talking hundreds of acres of farmland that could be taken out of production by this particular data center. So I think this moratorium is good because it just gives the county time to stop, breathe, pause everything that's happening, study the environmental impact, the economic impacts, develop some sort of zoning rules, which I think Wisconsin's going to probably have to have some sort of law in place at some point based on how many data centers are trying to come into the state. It gives the county a chance to look at the infrastructure plan, some of the emergency service requirements, and some of the decommissioning standards that might be important for these data centers.
All the things that will affect people's day-to-day lives in these communities. That's why you can't, it's a similar phenomenon, but not with the major impact that data centers are having across Wisconsin. The town I used to live in suddenly passed a law where you could have gaming. You know, you could have slot machines in bars and things. Well, they didn't really put any limit on it. So all of a sudden, the little downtown area that we had, every storefront had become one of these gaming centers. And people, you know, I don't know who go, a lot of people don't go in there. I never saw people in there. But it was unchecked is the point. So these places saying, let's pump the brakes. Let's see how this plays out. The ones that are in motion, they're going to finish. And then we see, instead of just opening the floodgates and then down the road in hindsight going, boy, this probably wasn't the best move because of higher bills and the infrastructure and all the things you mentioned. We didn't look into those first. We saw dollar signs and we grabbed it. And The money grab doesn't always work out.
No, it doesn't. Alicia pointing out over on our social media this morning, over on YouTube where she's watching, another large concern in Manitowoc County is windmill construction as well. So, you know, and I think that's just it. I don't think any of us are anti-development. We're not anti bringing in these new facilities. I think what most citizens are asking is let's reevaluate. Let's make sure that we're going to be able to afford our own electricity because these data centers are moving into the area. Let's make sure that we're not ruining our farmland and a large portion of how Wisconsin makes their income because of these data centers. Let's just reevaluate what's actually happening and let's put some rules on these companies as they're trying to come in and build these facilities. I like new jobs. I like to give people places to work.
That's a hot take, Jamie. I mean, you like giving people jobs?
I like it. Like when people could have jobs and, you know, and these data centers can potentially do that during the construction process and the people that will have to be there to run
permanent,
them.
Are they, but are they permanent jobs or are they
temporary
jobs? That's
what we need to know.
And it seems like once the data centers are built or data centers, you don't need too many people to actually be there.
Right.
From the investigating that we've done and the conversations we've had. Yes, there's a lot of jobs getting these things up and running, but then those kind of go away. So that's that. And plus we can't have windmills, Jamie, that kills the birds. I don't like the birds dying. Have you ever seen wind things flowing around? I don't like it.
I like some responsible planning. That's what I like. It's 6:29 right now. You are listening to Daybreak. I am Jamie Martinson.
And Wisconsin has joined more than 20 other states in suing the administration over tariffs. We'll talk about that after the break. It's Civic Media Network.
Now back to more of Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
6:35 right now on this Friday morning. If you are listening in Appleton and Oshkosh on WISS or in Eau Claire on 93.5 The Tap or even in Wisconsin Rapids on WFHR, thank you so much for joining the Civic Media Network. I am Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. We're glad you're with us this morning. When the Supreme Court said that the tariffs that the president had put in place unilaterally just decided this is what they're going to be, they said those were illegal. The president vowed that he would bring out new tariffs because, well, he says he can. So now Wisconsin, along with more than 20 states, are suing to challenge the Trump's new 15% global tariffs as an unconstitutional power grab. It's led by attorneys from Oregon, Arizona, California, and New York. But yesterday, Josh Call in Wisconsin jumped on board. There are, as I said, more than 20 states doing this because, they believe, and I believe, that these tariffs are illegal, that he doesn't have the right to do them. And they are really, really hurting not only the big picture across the country, but they are hitting very close to home in Wisconsin for small businesses. Jamie, you found a story about a company in Glendale.
Wyco Group, which is a shoe manufacturer, and they are saying that they paid about $16 million in tariffs in 2025 due to the administration's trade policies. Now, the company reports about $23 million in profits, which is down 24% from $30 million in 2024. And the CEO of this company said that tariffs increased their cost 19% to 50% depending on what country they were getting those goods from, making trade with China, their largest supplier, temporarily unworkable. Now, Wyco raised prices about 10%, but said that that only covered a small portion of the costs they were paying in the tariffs. The company kept some products overseas. They had to adjust production to avoid the higher tariffs. And Wyco filed a lawsuit seeking to recover the $16 million after the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that the law used to justify the tariffs exceeded presidential authority. Now, here's what I think is interesting. Wyco had to raise their shoe prices to basically cover their costs. That is completely contradictory to what this administration has told us about how tariffs actually work, because it turns out that the companies have to pay those tariffs that in turn charge us a higher price for those goods. So then we essentially, as the American people, as consumers, are paying for the tariffs. That's how that actually works. And Wyco told us so.
I don't think you're doing the math correctly. I was told that the other companies pay the tariffs. Well, these governors, all the 20 attorneys general, are saying that The lawsuit is saying that Trump is basically overstepping his power with the 15% tariffs on much of the world. He now has invoked Section 122 of a 1974 law. And I shudder to think how much research you did on it, Jamie, because I did just enough to say that this section has never been used before.
It
and
has
it allows
not.
The president to impose tariffs of up to 15%. Now, they're limited to 5 months unless extended by Congress.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of, it smells a little bit like the same thing that the Supreme Court said before when they rejected these tariffs because there is no emergency authority.
Right.
He claims emergency authority. They're saying there's no emergency.
Right. And I think that's going to be the big sticking point as the conversation about tariffs continues. And here's the thing that I would point out. I mean, we're talking, remember way back just a week ago when tariffs were the hottest story and then we happened to bomb a country and here we are and everybody's kind of forgotten about tariffs. Well, now we're in this.
Not if you're going to the store, you're not forgetting
well,
about
tariffs.
Well,
that's just it. We're in this precarious situation now. We are goods. We're already completely, in some cases, getting out of hand for a lot of people to purchase. The prices continue to rise, and now we're talking about some sort of devastation to the trade policies and communities because of this war in the Middle East and the fact that the Strait of Hormuz is now closed, so we can't get goods through, which the Strait is a major shipping route. So,
can I take you back a half hour? All the way back a half
yes,
hour.
Please, please do.
Where Donald Trump says he's not concerned about rising gas prices. He's not concerned about your rising costs everywhere else because he still believes everything is he believes. This is a justification for everything. Well, I believe he believes other countries are actually paying for the tariffs because he's. I don't know, uninformed, willfully ignorant. I don't know what
he is. Well, I believe that when I go to the grocery store, my grocery bill for the same things that I was buying 6 months ago have increased by about $45 to $50 total. Like if I'm
yes.
putting together a whole grocery bill, that's what I believe. And so I don't care what this president is telling me about what he believes. I believe that when I go to the store and I purchase those same few items that I do week after week, which are my pantry staples, I believe that I am paying more when I do so because of the fact that the prices continue to rise. That's what I believe.
And I believe that children are the future, but that's neither here nor there. We don't. That's not the point of the story. Yes, anybody who's not seeing this, it really, you are out of touch.
Yeah.
Because if you don't agree that everything is going up. But anyway, he's saying we've got to have these tariffs because we had such a trade deficit. Other
yeah.
countries were taking advantage of us. So we have to put these. The White House, of course, backing the president, saying he's acting within his power. That section, 122, is mm-hmm. aimed at what it calls fundamental international payment problems.
Yes.
At issue in this lawsuit is whether the wording covers trade deficits, which is the gap between what the U.S. sells other countries and what it buys from them. This arose from a financial crisis that emerged in the 60s and 70s when the U.S. dollar was tied to gold. But you know the U.S. dollar is no longer
yes.
tied to gold. So some legal analysts say that this may be a stronger case for the president, but it's not a lock.
From what I understand, Section 122 isn't going to apply here because if you really look at it, the law authorizes tariffs in limited circumstances, as you mentioned, including when there are large and serious balance of payments deficits. Notably, a trade deficit is not a balance of payment deficit, meaning
right.
that once again, if you look at it from those terms, whether or not the courts will agree or not, because they're much more versed in this than I am. But if you look at it from that perspective, the president is once again acting unlawfully by determining a blanket 10% to even 15% tariff across the board on all of our trade partners.
Right.
So
it's like if you're late on your electric bill and
mm-hmm.
it goes to collection. Not that I would know about that. But if it goes to suddenly put everybody under collection. No, just the one. So there is. You're right. If you try to make it everyday analogies, it'd be like penalizing everybody who owes on their credit card because one person is late on their credit card. That's the justification they're right. using for this, and it doesn't fit.
No, it doesn't. And this, and Section 122 really emerged during the 1960s and 1970s when other countries were dumping dollars in exchange for gold at this set rate, which was risking the collapse of the U.S. currency and then chaos in the financial markets. And as you rightly pointed out, gold is dollars and gold are no longer linked together. So right. this is going to be a bit of an obsolete section if this is what they're going to hang their hat on in this particular case. Now, it's interesting because I think that the lawsuit that is challenging this round of tariffs, this complaint essentially contends that the actions by the Trump administration are completely violating the law, upending constitutional separation of powers, and violating the Administrative Procedure Act. Here's what I'm going to say about that. This administration has not seemed to care at all about violating
anything.
So I don't think that they see this as any sort of violation. They just see this as the president promised to fix the fix trade and get more money for America, and this is what we're going to do. And they obviously do not care what Americans are going to be paying in the end or what these companies are paying at the end. And we're starting to see more companies, now that this has continued, take these financial hits, right? And lay
and
off.
People are speaking up. And yesterday, Josh Call put out a press release when Wisconsin joined this lawsuit. And in it, he said, quote, at a time when so many people are concerned about affordability challenges, that's made up by the Democrats. Come on, Josh. President Trump's tariffs have made the situation worse. The unlawful use of tariffs should stop. That's how the press release began from Josh Call yesterday. So I'm glad to see he's jumping in on all of these lawsuits.
Yes. Yes.
So are our neighbors, Michigan, Minnesota, and Illinois, all part of this. They're the only ones really, well, they're the only blue states in our neighborhood,
right.
basically. And so they're in a lot of East Coast, a lot of Southwest, New Mexico, New York, North Carolina, and many, many more. And then the governors of Pennsylvania and Kentucky are involved.
And I
well.
Saw a little, as this lawsuit made the news headlines yesterday, not just here in Wisconsin, but across the country because of the amount of states that are jumping into this. There was a lot of people who were pointing out Kentucky being a red state. Yes, Kentucky does traditionally vote a red state, but they do have a Democratic governor right now, Andy Beshear. And so you've got to think that that played a little bit into it, because obviously governors who are really trying to protect the people of their state and make sure that they are, you know, as they worry about the escalating prices, are trying to make sure that this administration does not continue to run rampant. Now, here's a question for you.
Yes.
As we talk about these tariffs and this Section 122 from the Trade Act of 1974, this is going to have to be kicked to Congress again in the next couple of months, right? There's 60 days on this.
60 days.
What do you think this Congress does? Are they going to tell the president, no, that he cannot do this? Are they going to rubber stamp this like they have done other things? Or will they do that fake debate and outrage on social media and on cable news, some of the GOP representatives, and then go ahead and vote in line with Mike Johnson and John Thune and the president in the long run?
That is interesting, because now we're in March. So that would put us in May. Let's say the end of May.
Mm-hmm.
So Memorial Day, this is going to come up for a vote. That's 2 months for these legislators to hear from their constituents, especially if you're a small business owner in a Republican represented area and you're not on the phone constantly with your representative, you're doing yourself a disservice. So 2 more months. Some primaries, some more primaries will have happened. The tide will be a little clearer what's happening. By then, you know, they'll see the effects that this happened. Now, if they were smart, and that's a big if, then they decide on their own. They make their own decisions based on their job of representing their constituents. So if I'm hearing from my constituents nonstop that these tariffs are killing them and this is not, yeah, guess what? And this is a constituent talking. I'm a Republican representative, and I can't afford my groceries. I can't afford anything that I'm ordering online. I can't afford things because of these tariffs. and I still back a guy who, if the House and Senate flip in November, is pretty much going to be kneecapped, then I do that at my peril as a representative. And also, at some point, they have to start believing the facts and the numbers, because the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, that's not just your local Chase corner branch.
Right.
They concluded nearly 90% of the costs of tariffs last year were paid by American consumers and businesses. This is not a made-up number. This is the truth. This is tariffs. And if you, as a Republican representative, are not listening to the people in your districts, you have no business being in Congress.
Nope. There's absolutely no responsibility then. You are listening to the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Local voices, statewide impact. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
6:52 right now. We hope that you are having a great Friday morning. Thank you so much for joining us, whether you're listening on your favorite local radio station or if you are joining us online or through the app. We are certainly glad that you're here. I am Jamie Martinson.
And good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. Sad news out of the sports world. And if you want to get involved and give us your thoughts on Bob Harlan, you are welcome to 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. I was trying to... Not. I want to let Jamie and Parker handle this because it affects you guys more. I'm sure you're more emotionally attached to this story than Frank and myself. But it's a loss in the sports world nonetheless, and it is a monumental loss. So day in Green Bay.
It is. Of course, talking about the passing of longtime president and CEO of the Green Bay Packers, Bob Harlan. He was 89 years old. He passed away at St. Mary's Hospital in Green Bay. He led the Green Bay Packers, Brian, for 18 and a half years.
Wow.
And whether you are a Packers fan or not, you got to have mad respect for Bob Harlan, because he was the man who transformed the franchise on the field and financially. He 100%. Joined the team in 1971. He was named president and CEO in 1989. One of the most important moves that I think Bob Harlan will always be known for was the hiring of general manager Ron Wolf, and he did that in 1991. And then Ron Wolf was the one who went ahead then and hired Mike Holmgren as head coach, then traded for Brett Favre, and then also signed Reggie White. So we are talking a legacy all under Bob Harlan's watch. And I had to do a little digging because I would have been remiss to not hear from Bob Harlan himself, because he was such a man of faith. He was such a compassionate person, just a passion for the Green Bay Packers and sports in general with his background. So I did a little digging. I found a 2007 interview that he did with St. Norbert College. And it was right after his book was released. And this is what he had to say about Ron Wolf. This is cut one, please.
And I always felt if we were ever looking for a general manager in the future, whether I was the one who selected him or not, and I certainly didn't think I would be, that we had to take a long look at Ron Wolf. And he'd worked for 25 years for the Oakland Raiders and Al Davis. And I thought, anyone who does that has got to be very dedicated and have great football knowledge, or he wouldn't have lasted that long. So when I called Ron and offered him the job, I said, you have total and full authority over the operation. I can promise you there will be absolutely no interference.
And this was a fascinating interview to go back and watch, by the way, because of all of the information that Bob Harlan had stored in his head, even in 2007, right? It was truly fascinating. But under his leadership, under the leadership of Bob Harlan and Ron Wolf, and Packers fans, we're not telling you any history you probably don't already know, but it's fun to relive the glory days a little bit.
Sure.
The Packers reached two Super Bowls, winning in 1997, and then they returned the following year. And during that Wolf era foundation from 92 to about 2017, the Packers went 261, 154, and 1, which is incredible. Incredible. A 63% winning percentage is what the Green Bay Packers had in that era. Now, the most controversial decision, and a lot of Packers fans will probably remember this, was the decision that he made for a 0.5% Brown County sales tax to renovate Lambeau Field, which was approved by the voters in 2000 and completed in 2003. Listening to that 2007 interview, one of the things that I found most striking is he said he didn't expect the pushback because it literally amounted to 13 cents per day on taxpayers' property tax bills. And so much pushback, ended up making it happen so that they could do all of those renovations, which really helps secure the Packers' financial future.
And just aside, it goes to show people vote by, or mm-hmm. people are upset about their pocketbook. They love the Packers. There's no doubt. If you've never been, and everybody here has been to Green Bay,
sure,
maybe not for a game, but you've been to Green Bay. A lot of towns, football is a seasonal thing, not in Green
Bay. It's everything.
And it is nonstop. So if people in Green Bay are scoffing at 13 cents a day,
mm-hmm.
that should be a lesson to every politician or every team that is trying to get public money.
Absolutely.
But that was just a sidebar.
Yeah, no, it's important. And he actually talked about some of that because that was what he basically had to tell people in Brown County is we're doing this to secure your future. We're doing this to secure the stability of the team and to bring more and to be a leader in the state. We all know how it turned out because now we're looking at Titletown District as well. So kudos to Bob Harlan. But he also ended the long-running practice of playing home games in Milwaukee. He moved all Packers home games permanently to Lambeau Field.
Nice.
And before joining the Packers, if you don't know, his background started with the St. Louis Cardinals baseball organization, where he served as sports information and also served as sports information director at Marquette University here in the state. And because of his roles with both teams, he was one of the few people to hold both a World Series ring and a Super Bowl ring.
Oh, that's cool.
I know. It's very cool. And here's a little bit more from that 2007 interview. Here is cut two, please.
I think I've been very fortunate. I had the chance to work at my alma mater and the opportunity to work with Al McGuire, who put together the greatest era in Marquette basketball history. Went to the St. Louis baseball Cardinals, who have a wonderful tradition. I was fortunate enough to be on a team that won a world championship there when I was a PR director. And then I came to the Packers, which I still think is the greatest story in sports. And I'm simply a caretaker of the Green Bay Packers. It's owned by the fans, and that's what makes it remarkable, that in the year 2007, Green Bay, the smallest community and professional sports, can still be a part of the National Football League. And it's been a wonderful opportunity for me.
In fact, a leader in many ways.
Absolutely.
Bob Harlan, shortly after this interview with St. Norbert, did retire. He was succeeded mm-hmm. by Mark Murphy as Packers president and CEO. And he is survived by his wife, Madeline, and three sons, including the famous broadcaster, Kevin Harlan. Great legacy.
And our own Parker is wearing his Packers shirt today in tribute.
Yes.
So,
great
RIP
legacy,
Bob Harlan. That was a great story. When we come back, we're going to get more into Christy Nome being fired and who is Mark Wayne Mullen. This is Daybreak. I'm Brian Noonan.
I'm Jamie Martinson. You are listening to the Civic Media Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.